Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Okay, welcome back to the First Cut Podcast. My name is Kyle Porter. I'm here as always with Mark Immelman. Mark, how's it going, man?
I'm fine, big guy. I'm enjoying a little time off from the PGA Tour, even though it's frenetic right now. And I'm in the midst of some college golf and a little dad on the scene, which I know you're doing as well. And sort of watching the PGA Tour from afar is fun too, you know, sitting on the couch and watching some golf. Because my Falcons are bad right now, so I'm more into golf than football.
Yeah, it's a tough scene for Matt Ryan and company. What do you get to play a lot? How much do you get to play these days?
I'm actually going to play this afternoon, and I've got to be honest with you. I've set a record this year. Last year, I played twice. This year, I think I've played like five or six times, with this afternoon being number seven, I believe. So lucky sevens for me right now.
Yeah, it is interesting. We're in golf media, and people, at least my friends, are like, "Oh, you must play all the time." And I'm like, "Well, no. Do you play golf all the time during your job?" And whenever we get to play, it's definitely still a treat.
Well, look, the teacher in me is coming out. Folks listening to this, if you think someone in golf plays a lot of golf, you're dreaming. If you want to play golf, and get into banking or law, or hey, you know what? When I give lessons, Kyle, I see a lot of dentists. So apparently, Dentists have golf as well. Yeah,
yeah, too much time on their hands. Okay, Kevin Na, want to talk about him? He wins the Shriners Hospitals for Children Open in a playoff over Patrick Cantlay. Kind of a crazy ending in the final round. He sets a new record for a number of how am I going to say this? Feet of putts made,
yeah, of putts
in a single tournament, 558 feet. He's now won. Mark, how about this? He's won three times in his last 30 events, and now all of a sudden, people are kind of starting to talk about, you know, are there President's Cup implications here? Could he be picked? Are there Ryder Cup implications for next year? He's turned himself into, you know, kind of a really consistent, fun, good player on the PGA Tour. How much does that surprise you based on what you know about his career?
Doesn't really surprise me at all. I've had him on my podcast in the past because the first time I ever watched Kevin Na play, I was struck by his grit. I was struck by the short game. I mean, his powers of recovery and of scrambling are off the charts, and there's no save that he can't make. And you know, the story of Kevin Na turning pro at, you know, he was basically 16 years old, said to his dad, incidentally, "Hey, I'm turning pro." And his dad was like, "Cool, you know, go ahead and do it." And he went over and he played in Asia and played in the European Tour and basically just learned his craft. And of late, to your observation, man, has figured something out. Three wins in his last 30 events. He's just a real gritty campaigner, great guy, well-respected on the tour, which is why I feel like, you know, he might be a real boon in the locker room because everyone looks up to him. He's been around the block, and he is afraid of nobody. I mean, look, Patrick Cantlay, I don't have to convince you because you're firmly on board there. He's a star, okay? And at Vegas, he's won there before. It's a ball striker's place. But Kevin Na held this boy off, and that came after that triple bogey 7 he made on 10 to come back with three quick birdies. I mean, that speaks of who Kevin Na is. And you talk of those putts that he made, it wasn't just how many putts he made. It was the timeliness of those putts. I mean, I spoke with a number of folks, and it's something to learn. Second to last hole in regulation there, 17, tough downhill par 3. He hits it in the right green side. Bunker has got nothing, aims away from the flag, really prudent play, and then makes, 20 feet or so for the par save. And it was almost Tiger Woods in effect, because you knew he was going to make it. And then they go extra holes, and then Cantlay stuffs one in there, makes a birdie, and Nah makes on top of him to extend the playoff. So it's not just that he's making putts, it's that he's got the timeliness of this all, and he makes kind of when he has to. So if you're talking President's Cup, if you're talking Ryder Cup, man, there's no match for a guy that can putt. And I tell you what, Kevin Nah can go.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I saw people kind of like making fun of the idea that Kevin Nah would be on the President's Cup team. Kevin Na's the 24th ranked player in the world. Like he's 14 spots of Jordan Spieth. He's one spot ahead of Jason Day. He's the 14th ranked American. So it's not. Do I think he's going to be on the President's Cup team? Probably not. But it's not inconceivable. And certainly he's in the conversation with guys like Ricky Fowler, Patrick Reed. You know, some of these guys that finish kind of on the outside looking into to the top guys on Tiger's President's Cup team.
You know, the thing is too, with selection for these things, you know, you get the name value, you know, what is my team on paper?
Yeah.
That's one thing versus what is my team on grass? I mean, when these guys are playing, what are they doing? So form is always an indicator. And I, you know, if a guy's playing well and he's making putts and he's winning tournaments, that has to garner a player some consideration. And Nah, to your point, spoke after the event that he believes he's a valuable choice. So not only is he playing well, he believes that he'll be worthwhile. And that is worth its weight in gold, in my opinion, as well.
Yeah, it's true. I was curious about your thoughts on, so he finishes negative strokes gained from tee to green, which is, it's unbelievable that you can win a tournament negative strokes gained tee to green. But obviously, like we've been talking about, just put it out of his mind. And, you know, I don't think that either of us would say that's a great formula long term. But where do you fall on the just kind of the week to week debate about putting versus ball striking?
You know, it's a difficult one. The strokes gain folks, you're one of those, and you'll probably shoot me down some for this. You know, if you can drive it long and put it in play, you have the natural advantage over the short hitter. But the truth of it all is you have to get the ball into the hole. And I can show you, you know, when Rory was driving the ball great and missing putts, everyone was just talking about the fact that Rory had to putt better. Okay. And I think back to when Luke Donald played his way to number one in the world. He had a recipe, basically, where they figured out that if you can gain two strokes on the field per round, it doesn't matter how you do it. You can do a half stroke off the tee, half a stroke scrambling, one stroke putting, whatever it adds up to. Gain two on the field a round, and you will eventually make your way to the top of the world ranking pile, which he did. And as I look at those numbers right now, Nah is currently 1.99 strokes gained putting. So he's basically at that two number.
Yeah,
he's 111th on the tee for the season, gaining 0.03 off the tee. So, yeah, he's not dominant off the tee, but those two are enough to basically push him over that two-point number. I think the only issue with Kevin Nah right now is the iron game is not that flush, and he's losing almost 0.2 of a stroke. So all of this has to add up, and it's a tough metric, and I will go with the advantage to the longer hitter. But you know, when it comes right down to it, you have to make putts if you want to win, and that is the truth. And if you go into a PGA Tour locker room, each and every one of those guys will say that to you, even though they might admit, man, I wish I could drive it like Rory or whatever the case might be. In the end, you have to putt to compete.
Well, and I think the thing that some of the statistics people, myself included, we kind of miss sometimes is what, like, we look at the stats, but these guys, they don't compete in a silo, right? It's not as if they are like siloed off and not like interacting while they play. So they are interacting. And to watch somebody make 20 footer after 20 footer as an opponent, that's demoralizing. That's more demoralizing than watching somebody hit a drive 340 yards, because you, Patrick Cantlay, as the contenders, like, well, what do I have to do to, you know, get ahead of this guy? And so I think that's, there has to be some at least psychological effect in there that gets a little bit, you can't measure that by the statistics. And I think that some of that gets a little bit lost sometimes with great putters.
Oh, absolutely. I always gravitate back to Bob Jones. And I think I've said this on this podcast before that, you know, Jones was a star in the making as a young golfer, had a bit of a hot temper, but struck the ball beautifully, but didn't make putts. And then he hooked up with Walter Travis, who made him change putters to the Calamity Jane. First thing they did, helped him with the putting. Then Jones became the star, the Hall of Famer that he was. And Travis said to him, "You show me a man who can putt, and I will show you a match for any man." And when that's whether that's match play or whether that's stroke play, it's how it goes. And so for all of these guys, it's great to drive it long. And you're right, the things don't operate together. But the score that one's made, it's this, well, one day I drive it great and I don't putt so well. And the next day I hit my irons great and I make a few. And then the next day everything's awry, but because I make putts, I keep the score alive, so I keep myself in the tournament. So it's this beautiful mesh of everything throughout the week. And the one thing is for sure, though, if you're flushing it the entire day, and I see it often with McIlroy, and I know you do too, you flush it the entire day, you shoot 70, and then you play with some guy who scraps it around the place there and shoots 69, that can climb underneath one's skin.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, we see that very, very often with some of the best players in the world. Okay, speaking of the best players in the world, Jon Rahm wins the Spanish Open second year in a row. It's his fifth European Tour victory. He pretty much dusted this field. I think he beat fourth place. He beat Rafa Cabrera-Bello by, I think it was five. He beat fourth place by like nine strokes. I mean, it was a beatdown, really. And this is the trajectory that he's been on. He misses the Dunhill Links cut last week over at St. Andrews in Scotland. But other than that, you go back to the U.S. Open, he's been lights out in every single tournament that he's played. I know winning a Spanish Open that doesn't have the greatest field in the world probably doesn't change your view of Rahm. But where do you see him going into 2020 in terms of some of the top events and some of the major championships?
You know, I feel like we've talked about this every week, and it was like, well, Rahm's just doing Rahm stuff again. And last week, I'm prepared to throw that out. It's a pro-am, was playing alongside his dad, and the weather was kind of iffy, the scoring was low. We talked about it with McIlroy complaining about it. So the three-round cut in a pro-am, you can let that slide for a Jon Rahm. But when he shows up and plays, because he had set the goal of defending his title, and he does so in emphatic fashion, incidentally, sets the European Tour record for becoming the fastest Spaniard to get to five European Tour wins, eclipsing Seve Ballesteros. Rahm does this in 39 events. Seve did this in 49 events. So Seve has been the best golfer in the world. Rahm is doing all the best golfer in the world stuff right now. And, you know, the thing about the weak field, you've still got to get there and play. And you've still got to get there and shoot the score. And he did that. I mean, the guy was just nuts. Ball striking wise, putting wise, he did everything right. And as far as this continues, all the Spaniards, all the Latin Americans, these are confidence guys. And when they get a little bit of that mojo working, they are tough to beat. That's we see it in the Ryder Cup all the time. And in the President's Cup, it's the same sort of thing. I think back to Johnny Vegas a few years ago, who was a lightning rod for the internationals in a drubbing. So I just see Rahm continuing this stuff. The confidence is high. The golf swing is very reliable because of the shortness and the abruptness of it all. And, you know, when he starts making putts, which he does often, he is going to be a real tough out for all comers.
Yeah, he definitely is. We'll see how long this sort of under the radar heater lasts, but he's been on it for a while. Okay, real quick, I wanted to get your take on so Bryson DeChambeau, after the Vegas event, he finishes T4 as last year's champ, and he has this weird quote afterwards where he started talking about like what he's going to do over the next few months, about how he's going to work out. And he said, I'm going to read this to you. He said, he was asked, are you going to be bigger or slimmer? This was the media person asking him this question. And he said, bigger, way stronger. And then he goes, not necessarily bigger, but just stronger in general. I'm going to look probably a lot bigger, but it's going to be a fun month and a half off. I've never been able to do this, and I'm going to go do things that are going to be a lot of fun. I don't really know what's going on here. Maybe he's trying. He's going to try to make your Falcons squad for 2020.
Need him on the offensive line, man. He's going to get bigger.
I don't know, but I think his end goal, I think, is to just be longer off the tee. What was your takeaway from all this?
Well, my instant takeaway is that he researches everything. So there has to be something that they've figured out where he's like, okay, if I get a little stronger, and I define that as bigger, then that'll gain him a little gas off the tee or whatever the case might be. Maybe it's just, you know, oftentimes getting bigger is just developing yourself all around better, which makes you more resistant to injury. Because if that's the one thing I learned from Gary Player way back in the day. You know, he was the guy to work out. He said to me, swing in both directions. Because if I'm swinging in one direction the whole time, your body will sort of get misaligned, if you will. And so maybe this is injury prevention and getting just stronger all around and getting the body more in balance. I don't know. But my instant take to this is, well, he must have figured out that there is some advantage to this, whether it's power, whether it's injury prevention, whether it's overall well-being, who knows? He always keeps stuff very close to the chest, DeChambeau does. But, you know, he's a fascinating cat, and now I'm keen to see how big he turns out, because one thing I can tell you, he is a big dude anyway. You know, I'm not the biggest guy in the world. We all know this. But when I stand next to him, he's thick across his shoulders and his chest, and he's got strong legs as well. So I'm keen to see what he actually goes and does.
Yeah, he is brawny. And last year he was 34th on the PGA Tour in driving distance, which is when you hit it like he does with his irons is plenty good enough to be competitive. So yeah, I'm interested to see how that plays out as well. Somebody else who's been hitting the weights, Phil Mickelson. He goes out, shoots 65 in round one at Vegas. Kind of fades. I think he finished 61st on the weekend. He shot like a 74 on Saturday, which at that event is like shooting. I mean, on that day, it was like shooting an 84, you know, based on kind of what the scores were. Any broad takeaways from the last few weeks of Phil?
Well, he's been working hard on the game. He said that to a number of folks. And as I just looked through the statistics, it was a statistical uptick. I know the third round was a bit of an aberration, but came out quickly with 65, 6 under on day one. Day two got off to a slow start on a difficult afternoon where it was kind of blustery and firm and bounced back for 2 under. And then the final round played solidly. But from a statistical point of view, I was driving it long and was driving it in play a lot. You know, for the week, I think he hit 6 out of 10 fairways on average, and the iron game was there. The one thing that wasn't performing was the putter, and he lost some strokes to the field there. So all going in the right direction, and I think even though the results, finishing well down the field, was not what he was after, I'm sure there's a bit of a positive spin that was taken from this for Phil and something he can build on into future events.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see what the rest of his fall looks like, but it's tough. He can't, to me, it seems like he can't put 4 rounds together. So hopefully he finds that as we head into 2020. Real quick before we go and hear from our sponsor. Go ahead.
One second, if you can. This gets back to the putting thing because, yeah, he's driving it along. He's putting it in play, but not putting well, and that's why he doesn't put 4 rounds together. You know, you're going to have one off round. I'll never forget this. Nick Price mentioned to me, he goes, you win a tournament by making sure your bad day is okay. And the bad day for Phil in round 3 was 74. It's because he wasn't making putts. So it's an area that he definitely needs to go and iron out.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so we're going to play a little game after we hear from our sponsor. But last thing on news and notes here, Players Championship. 2020, they're showing every shot,
man,
of the tournament. Can you confirm whether or not you're just going to be running around Sawgrass with your iPhone streaming this to people?
Folks at the PGA Tour have been talking about this for a while, and I think we sort of all saw it coming, you know, with the advent of PGA Tour Live and then how PGA Tour Live expanded to fall coverage now, and they're doing so with what they call live view cameras. And then they're covering feature group coverage down there at the President's Cup at the end of the year as well. So it's all happening, and this is the tour's – it's the crown jewel for the PGA Tour. And so I'm not surprised at all. Apparently, they're going to have something like 120 cameras posted around the entire golf course. And so
that's awesome.
It's going to be fun, man. I'll tell you what. And the coverage is going to be wall-to-wall, and you know, I'll be a part of the PGA Tour Live stuff down there. So I'm jacked about it, and I think it's a neat way for people that just haven't seen this great golf course and haven't seen this field to be able to get a look at the entire thing and follow their favorites and sort of get a feel for perhaps not what the network is showing with the guys who are playing the best.
Yeah, I think it's great. Like, look, I don't agree necessarily with everything the PGA Tour does or every decision that they make, but I think this is just, I don't know, man. I think it's awesome. And I think it's just, it's very commendable. Kudos to them for going in the direction that I think a lot of fans are clamoring for. And, you know, I know it's not simple. It's not straightforward. It's an undertaking. I mean, it's a big deal. And I'm really excited to experience that next year. I think that's going to be awesome.
Well, the cool thing about this too, and you're a content guy, you know, it's all about content nowadays, and content is king, and golf is a content-rich sport. I mean, think about how many balls are in the air at one time at any PGA Tour Live event. So you're at the Players, it's 144 guys. Every hole at that place is, you know, it's eye candy, and it's visual and sensory overload. There's a whole bunch of content, and it's a big undertaking, and I'm keen to see how this gets pulled off. But, you know, you said it, kudos to the tour for trying. I mean, someone was going to do it, and you would think that the tour would be the first folks.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, let's take a break, Mark, and then we'll come back and play some career earnings over-under after Kevin Na's win in Vegas. We'll be right back.
I love a beautiful lawn. You love a beautiful lawn. Everybody loves a beautiful lawn, but they don't love how long it takes and how difficult it can be. And that is where True Green comes into play, because it's the easiest and most affordable way to get that beautiful lawn. Let's be real. You've got plenty of other things to do in your free time than focus on your lawn care. So let True Green take care of all of that hard work while you get to do everything else that you want to do, like go play golf. Here's what you need to do. Visit truegreen.com. Okay. It allows you to do you. Let them do the lawn care. And if you visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, that is all guaranteed. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. It's truegreen.com. Get started now. Did you know that more than 75% of Americans will experience foot pain in their lifetime, but only 10% will seek out a solution for that pain? Those numbers do not add up to me, and I know it can be confusing, the biomechanics of the foot, the bones, the muscles, everything in between, but solving foot pain is simple, and that's where Superfeet comes into play. These Superfeet insoles go into your shoes, give your feet comfort and support where they need it the most, and redistribute the forces that reduce both stress and strain through your entire body, not just your feet. Insoles have been phenomenal for me personally, and they are clinically proven to decrease fatigue, reduce injury, and improve comfort. I can attest to that myself, especially when walking a lot of golf holes that I play. So if you feel good, you play good, you look good, everything works out from there, and it starts from the bottom up. Visit superfeet.com and enter promo code FIRST at checkout for 15% off your first order plus free shipping.
Okay, Mark, I got six guys for you. We're going to lead off with Kevin Na. I'm going to give you a number for over-under on career earnings. So I'll give you a number, and you tell me whether you think their actual career earnings are over this number or under this number, okay?
Shoot.
You ready?
Yeah.
Let's go Kevin Na at $29
million. Oh, he's way over that. I don't know what it is, but for the regular PGA Tour guy, someone like Na, I mean, think about Charles Howell. They making printing money every year, a couple, $2-3 million. Now I'd say he's well over that, having played golf as long as what he has.
That's correct. $32.0 million.
Okay.
Right at 32. So you got that one. Let's go Webb Simpson. 35 mm-hmm. million, over or under 35 million?
He's won a few times as well, Webb. I'm going to take the over.
You're just going to go over on everybody, aren't you?
Well, these guys play for a lot of money. They really
do. They do. That's also correct. Webb is at $35.8 million in his career, which is crazy. He's my age, Mark. He's like 34 years old, and he's already
small when you were.
He's already banked $35.8 million with a lot of runway in front of him, and maybe some of his best golf in front of him based on how he's played the last couple of years. Okay. Keegan Bradley, $26 million.
I'm gonna go under with that one. Keegan's still young, and I'm using the inverted commas thing. I'd say marginally under.
You're cheating. You're getting them all.
No, dude, I work around the game. Hey, I'm related to a guy that's made a significant amount of money on the PGA Tour, and so I know what these guys play for.
That's true. He's at $25.6 million, so that's correct. Keegan Bradley is under $26 million.
So just, okay. There's six guys, so basically I can't fail this examination now, right?
Yeah, you're 3-for-3 with three left. Okay. We got Tony Finau, and the number I set for him is $16 million.
Oh goodness, this one's hard. Something is saying to me he's under. He's had one victory on the tour. He's a perennial top tenner, but I'm going to take just barely under that number.
He's actually over. He's almost to 18. He's $17.8 million. So yeah, one victory, but a ton. I mean, he probably made $5 million in runner-ups over the last couple of years, just on his second place finishes alone.
The modern day Matt Kuchar. I mean, he's just a machine.
Yeah. Okay. Rafa Cabrera-Bello, and I set that. And again, this is not PGA Tour only. It's global earnings. So I set the number on Rafa at $20 million.
Wow. I have to admit, I don't know enough about Rafa. I think his golf swing has fallen straight out of heaven, and he's something to behold in the locker room. I mean, the guy's a machine. I'm going to go under.
Under? You're under?
Yes.
It's actually over. He's made $21.2 million. I think that was the one that surprised me the most out of these guys. Uh-huh. Just because...
Well, it's to the European Tour. The purses have increased dramatically over the last little while. I mean, back in the day, the guys were having to room together on the European Tour because the purses weren't so great.
Yeah.
Now they're all over the world, and they play for big, big purses. And hell, what they do over there too. I mean, we haven't even considered the appearance fees some of these guys draw. So just fine of that. I'm convinced.
Okay. Last one, Dustin Johnson, $65 million. You going over or under $65
million? Over.
It's actually under. You got in your head after the first three. You missed the last three. He's $63.7 million over the course of his career. He's another guy. He's just older than me. He's made $63.7 million in his career.
Oh, goodness. Is,
incredible.
Here's the question for you. Does he get to 100 mil?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be interesting because you're going to see some guys, like nobody's going to touch Tiger's 81 wins, but wait, is he at 81 or 82?
82. Well, yeah. Shucks, I'm in trouble now. It's 82, yes.
Yeah, because the next one was, I'm in my head. Nobody's going to touch that, right? But because, like you mentioned, the purses have increased so much, somebody might touch his. I think he's at like 115 million or 120 million. You might see somebody actually touch that, even though they only win 30 or 35 times on the PGA Tour. So at some point, Tiger's going to be overtaken in the same way that guys like Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus were overtaken by guys from Tiger's generation.
Hold on. Now, listen quickly. I'm looking at Tiger Woods' Wikipedia. Professional wins 108. PGA Tour wins 81. Were we giving him one extra here? All confused now, man. Sorry.
The PGA Tour had this whole campaign, and I don't remember it. I'm lost, Mark. It's football season. Let's talk about the Falcons.
This is deferring. Yeah, the Falcons aren't good. But I mean, back to this career earnings thing. I'd love to know what McIlroy has earned. I mean, that's got to be off the charts already.
I can look it up for you real quick. Yeah, Tiger's at 81. So the Masters was win number 81. So 82 would have would tie Sam Snead's record. So if and when he wins again, that will tie Sam Snead. That's right.
Well, thanks for clearing that up. That is a good recovery there, like Kevin now.
And I'll get you out of here on this. Rory McIlroy career earnings. Rory McIlroy born in May 4th, 1989. He has made $69.2 million over the course of his career,
and quadrupled that off the course. And yes. Life grand. God bless America.
yes, for sure. Okay, Mark. We're gonna go study each one of Tiger's 81 wins on the PGA Tour, and we will be back to chat again next week.
All right, brother. You take care.
Talk to you later, Mark.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.